This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba through the hour talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Do you have a question for Zorba? Call 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, all with some interesting research. What do we have this time?
We're going to talk about the new FDA pill, the pill that has been okayed for menstrual cycles and birth control that eliminates the menstrual cycle completely. Yes. We'll talk about the pros and the cons.
Been in the news, and there is some controversy.
Yes, and snacking. We've always said snacking is bad, bad, bad for you because we get so many calories from snacking.
Right.
But what about for older adults?
Oh.
Maybe it's a different story.
Okay. And speaking about food.
Grilled eggplant with peanut sauce. Peanut sauce is commonly used in Thailand, Malaysia, and Indonesia. Grilled eggplant, I think, is fabulous. You will like this recipe, Tom. I promise you.
Can I substitute a pork chop for the eggplant?
Grilled eggplant, pork chop.
Okay.
We'll allow you to.
Our medical myth buster coming up as well. So lots of good reasons to stay tuned here to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, a listener with us now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I do the right thing every day by drinking a lot of water throughout the day.
How much is a lot?
Well, sometimes it can be as much as about 80 ounces, but the problem is if I'm up multiple times during the night having to go to the bathroom. So, I mean, I'm trying to do the right thing by drinking a lot of water because I hear that's, you know, what you're supposed to do. But then it's kind of waking me up several times. Sometimes it's only once or twice. Sometimes it's three or four times, just depending. So I'm wondering if I'm, one, doing the right thing, if I should stop earlier, drink less, or if there's a natural diuretic I could take during the day to help me.
Well, you're actually drinking a tremendous amount of water.
Yeah, and I also eat a lot of, this might be part of the problem, I eat a lot of sunflower seeds. It's been part of a snacking diet that I've been able to lose 18 pounds since the first of the year.
Good for you. The sunflower seed diet. I can see a book coming out of that. Eat sunflower seeds and lose weight in 5 days. Something,
there you go.
Something like that.
Do you feel you're forcing the water?
No, I feel like if I don't have it with me, I'm thirsty. If I'm out and about, I get thirsty. But it's not an unnatural craving for water.
Let me explain first of all where this may have come from. And the answer is, when I did some research on it, we don't have the foggiest idea where, quote, 8 glasses a day of water came from, and it has no scientific basis. A lot of this had to do with the fact that water, especially in the 30s, not all city water was potable, was drinkable.
Right.
So the idea is when you have drinkable water, you should drink it, because at home there was not, certainly in the city of Chicago, there were some houses that didn't have water. But when you do the research, it turns out that it is fallacious that you need 8 glasses of water a day. And the best data now shows, drink when you're thirsty, don't drink when you're not thirsty. And you're clearly drinking too much. I mean, the reason why you're getting up in the middle of the night is you're giving yourself a bunch of water. And then there's this concept in America that we're going to flush the kidneys, as if the kidneys need to be flushed. I mean, kidneys are not flushed like a toilet. They don't have to be flushed, so that all the water goes through it and gets rid of the calcium on the surface of the kidneys, which really doesn't exist. You should only drink if you're thirsty. And what I noticed, for instance, in our office, quite interestingly, there are a couple of people in our office that come with these giant glasses. I mean,
right.
I think they're like half a gallon of liquid, and they are continuously drinking throughout the day. And I don't know if this is sort of a mania or what, but
well,
it certainly isn't.
Could it be an addiction?
It's habit. It's not addiction in the sense of the word of what addiction means, but it certainly is a habit. And you have gotten into the habit of continuously drinking water, and that habit has produced a lack of sleep.
Yeah.
I mean, you need 6 to 8 hours of sleep. There's no doubt about that, and it's hard to do that when you get up during the night and you got to go to the washroom.
What about this, Orbit? Could it not be that if you have a whole lot of water during the day, you're less likely to have a whole lot of food, and that it has a, could it be a kind of a diet thing?
That was the Stillman diet of the 90s. 1960s and 1970s, the idea that if you drink 8 glasses or 10 glasses of water a day, you'll eat less. But of course, you know, drinking water doesn't get people not to eat. I mean, a lot of people drink water, and here it is, you're on the sunflower seed diet, for which you will become famous, by the way, in the future, because we're going to market that book. You and I are going to market that book together.
We're there.
But the salt in the sunflower seeds that you're eating, are you eating salted sunflower seeds or unsalted?
Yes, I am. I mean, in the shell, so it's the shell with the salt.
Well, you see, what's happening also is that you're getting a lot of salt, and that definitely, salt does make you thirsty. I mean, that's why they serve free salty snacks in bars, because they know that when you eat salt, you will need water. Yeah, you'll drink water. So my recommendation is two things. Number one, unsalted sunflower seeds, truly. And then only drink when you're thirsty. Let yourself get thirsty. Give up this whole idea that you have to drink. It's going to take a while to get out of that habit. You know, instead of a big cup, you could take a sippy cup with you and have a little bit of water in there. But I would get away from the habit of simply drinking because you have liquid next to you.
Okay.
Good.
Well, hopefully that will reproduce some sweet dreams for me then.
Yeah. Appreciate the call.
Thank you much.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. Talking about snacking, Zorba, you mentioned research on snacking, which suggests that for one age group, some snacking during the day is a healthy thing.
Right, absolutely. You know, if you look at Americans and how much we snack, we get somewhere between 25 and 40% of our daily calories from snacks. You know, and those snacks are often sweet foods and salty foods. Yeah. I mean, you know, generally, you don't think of a snack as a healthy thing, although a piece of fruit and a handful of nuts are definitely healthy snacks, and they're okay. So what we do is when we tell people to lose weight, the first thing we say is
give up the snacks
or change the snacks, alter the snacks, eat less of the snacks, eat the right snacks, and you try to alter that. But for older Americans, Americans over the age of 65, definitely Americans over the age of 75, it's a different issue, because often those Americans don't get enough calories, especially people who are shut-ins and who get Meals on Wheels. Meals on Wheels are basically throughout the entire country. They're delivered by volunteers, and they're one meal that older adults often stretch into two meals because they're not hungry and they don't eat it.
That's my Uncle Dudley and Aunt Marie. I've mentioned
Dudley.
You've
talked about Dudley before.
They, in their older years, when they were over 80, they used to get Meals on Wheels, except it would be Meal on Wheels.
Meal on Wheels,
and then they would split the one meal between the two of them because they just weren't that hungry.
They weren't that hungry. And one of the reasons that older people are not as hungry is, it's not just that they're older. They don't have the same smell. They don't have the same taste buds. Mm-hmm. So they often like things that are cold, ice cream. Old people love ice cream on the whole, senior citizens, and salty, sweet foods because they can taste it with their tongue even though they can't smell as well and therefore get really subtle taste. But the issue, getting back to the article, was that snacks that is healthy may be an important thing to institute for people over the age of 60.
Well, now you're talking about calories here.
Right.
And it says, I know in this research, to stay away from empty calorie foods like chips and things. But what about things like Snickers? I mean, is that an empty food?
I think that most nutritionists would say Snickers
but
is an empty
food. But if the calories
food.
Are a problem,
yes.
you get a lot of calories from a
yes,
Snickers bar,
is,
as you have pointed
yes,
out
that,
in the
that
past.
That is absolutely true. And Snickers has chocolate, and a little bit of chocolate would be
and
good
nuts.
For you. It's got some peanuts, though. It's not the right kind of nut.
Some caramel.
And it's got caramel. Caramel or caramel, whatever they call it. Now, would we call that healthy? I think it's kind of just sweet, you know.
Yeah.
Now, you get a little protein
but what
from
I'm talking
the peanut.
About, what about just loading up on calories?
Yeah,
isn't that
I don't know if I can kind of get my brain around the fact that I'm going
to
recommend that an older American should have a Snickers every day for their mid-afternoon snack. I don't think so. Handful of nuts, though. Handful of nuts, it would be okay.
Yeah.
Piece of fruit. The idea is that we have too many empty calories. The answer is an occasional Snickers is just fine.
Yeah.
But every single day, it's not good for you. It doesn't have protein. It's not protein. There really isn't very much protein
and
in a Snickers.
Bottom line, maybe people who are older who may only get one real meal each day.
They should snack. That's the bottom line. Older folks who have one meal a day and don't eat very much and are thin ought to have a snack every day. Yes, a healthy snack.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba, to Bozeman, Montana now. Hi.
Hi, guys.
What's up?
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I, uh, was looking at treating some high cholesterol with natural products, specifically looking at maybe some red yeast rice with garlic, and I've read some other different concoctions with adding niacin to it and so forth. And my main reason for looking at this and getting your input was I've also heard that some of the statin drugs are not that good long-term for your heart and your liver, and wondering what your input would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, let's talk about the natural way to treat cholesterol. And there are some natural ways of dropping the risk of heart disease and treating cholesterol. And if we look at natural ways, the first thing you have to think about is fiber. Fiber, 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 fiber. And oat bran fiber is probably the one that's been most studied. It shows it's there. Psyllium fiber, either from natural psyllium or from Metamucil, works. Whole grains, we know, also work. So fiber actually reduces cholesterol. Second thing is reduction of fat. Overall fat, reducing the amount of fat you're eating makes a difference, especially animal fat. Reduction of animal fat reduces cholesterol, too. And those are very natural ways of doing it. Now, what about another natural way? Well, niacin in large doses, and niacin is a vitamin, but in large doses of 500 to 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day really does work on reducing cholesterol. And we kind of don't think of it as a vitamin in that amount because you're taking so much of it. But niacin is a good way of doing it. And then there's Benecol. Benecol is a natural substance. It's a plant sterol, it's called. And Benecol is a margarine that has this plant sterol in it that also reduces cholesterol. That's a natural product, even though it's a manufactured margarine, it's in there. And these are kind of things that naturally do it. But there's lots of stuff out there that doesn't do anything. And it's simply sold under a guarantee to improve heart health because they can't prove that it lowers cholesterol because they can't prove it either. They've not spent the money to prove it, or it really doesn't do
it. What about his concerns about the dangers
of statins? Well, statins have an issue. Statins reduce heart attack and stroke. There's no doubt about it. They are not bad for your heart at all. They are good for your heart. I'm totally sold on them. I think the drugs are good. I think they work well. But they can have side effects. The most common side effect for people is achy muscles. And for many people who have that side effect, it feels like you have the flu. You know, when you're in bed and you kind of have the flu and you ache all over, that's the type of muscle ache. Not your right arm that hurts.
Yeah.
It's the entire body that aches. And that's the most common side effects from statins. Liver function, initially when they came out, we thought it was an issue. What you do is you have your liver tested once, 2 to 3 months after you start the statin. If the liver function tests are fine, some people recommend you don't have to do it again at all, and other people recommend you get it tested once a year. But for the most part, the liver effects of statins, the ones that are on the market now, are very, very minimal. So it's sort of a question that people have to ask individually. Am I going to change my diet and do whole wheat and whole bran and try to treat it that way, or am I going to take the drug route? And frankly, changing the diet, doing the exercise, doing the whole bran, that works for a lot of people. It doesn't work for everybody, but it's kind of, I think, the best first step. So is your cholesterol high?
Well, it was like about 250, and through exercise and diet, it's down to like 224 now.
Fabulous. That sounds great. What about the bad cholesterol, the LDL? That's the stuff we really worry about. What was that?
Currently, it's 155.
Uh-huh. So that's a little bit elevated. Our goal is kind of 130 or below. If you have known heart disease, of course, we push that number a little bit lower. But it sounds to me, how old are you this year?
52.
You know, sounds like it. I'll tell you, one of the ways you can find out, go to our website. Go to the Heart Attack Risk Calculator. It's on our website, zorbapastor.org. Put in your numbers into the Heart Attack Risk Calculator, and you'll find out, even if you lower your cholesterol by 30 to 50 points, the drop in the risk of having heart disease is very minimal. It sounds to me like you're really close to goal. I would keep it up in a natural way. But I think I would hit the things I know work, which is oat bran.
Sounds good.
Good luck.
All right, Zorba. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for the call.
We appreciate
it.
Thanks for calling.
800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Appleton, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi, Zorba. Hi, Tom.
How can we help you?
I have been diagnosed with fatty liver, and I was wondering if there is anything I can do to help that out, or if there's any dietary things I need to avoid, that would be beneficial.
You said with fatty liver?
Yes.
Yes. So you had abnormal liver function tests. Is that what you had?
Yes.
Okay. A fatty infiltration of the liver, that's what it's called. And it means that we eat too much, and so our liver sometimes has fat in it. And it's a diagnosis that we make on CAT scan. We do a CAT scan of the liver, and you see streaks of fat. And often it's because people have an elevated liver function test, and we go, gee, what's going on with your liver? Do you have hepatitis? Do you have cirrhosis? Do you have something serious going on like cancer? And we go, oh, you've got fatty infiltration of the liver. And basically, we don't do much about it. I mean, if you become very thin, you may get rid of that fatty infiltration of the liver, but it doesn't lead to cirrhosis, it doesn't lead to hepatitis. It just leads to these elevation of this one particular blood test. And when we kind of watch this in people, that's what we do. What's your height? What's your weight?
5'7", and I am now 148.
Oh, well, that's pretty good. You're doing very well. When did you start losing weight?
About 3 months ago.
About when you found out you had fatty infiltration
exactly.
in the liver?
Yeah.
Well, that can be a motivation, can't it? How much weight did you lose?
15 pounds.
That's a good amount of weight. That's a good amount. So that may reduce, you know, you reduce fat all over the body when you start to lose weight, including in your liver. And it may be a reduction, in which case these liver function tests may return to normal. But frankly, we just kind of follow them. They're just they're a test.
Well, here you say no big deal.
Well, it doesn't lead to any disease. The biggest deal is that we have to figure out if there's anything else going on. That's sort of the biggest deal, that we have to keep you away from other tests that we would be doing, you know. And basically we do that by the diagnosis. So what did your doctor say to you when you had it?
He was very concerned about my triglycerides rating and then followed up my liver test and said that I needed to lose.
So he was concerned because you had some abnormal lipids, as we call it, cholesterol, triglycerides. Mm-hmm. So he was concerned for that reason. Well,
yes.
It sounds like it motivated you to change the way you live, and that is great. Congratulations.
It certainly did. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, thanks for your help. That puts me at ease.
Good. Thanks a lot for the call. We really appreciate it. Zorba, you may recall a few weeks ago we got an email from Betsy who wanted to know why her husband and his foundry work buddies were always craving salty snacks.
Yes. Yeah, I do remember
that. Maria in Kiwanda, New York, wanted us to know that a friend of hers worked in a foundry his whole life as well, and that he and his co-workers were often given salt tablets due to the extreme heat of the work environment and excessive perspiration. Maybe that explains why Betsy's husband was always asking her to pass the salt.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a possibility. Sure. I think that sounds like
you're working in a hot environment.
Right. We no longer give salt tablets because we get so much salt from the food that we're eating. I mean, that's kind of fallen to the wayside. But yeah, because when you sweat, you certainly release salt when you sweat. I mean, sweat is salty. And the answer is sure. Maybe that's the reason that they craved salt was because they were losing salt in the foundry. You know, when I think of a foundry, I think of something that's really hot, where you're sweating all the time. And isn't that your image?
I don't have an image of foundry anymore because all of our industry is
true.
Gone. I didn't know we even had foundries anymore,
frankly.
We
had foundries. Yeah, we used to have a foundry in Madison. We haven't had a foundry in Madison, Wisconsin for years. And when I worked in high school, I worked in a gumball machine factory, and then we were just covered with sweet gumball dust. Gum dust. Actually, that was pretty good. That was pretty good gum dust. I used to go buy a box of gumballs and take a whole handful, and we would try to eat as many gumballs as we could and chew them, and they were so sweet.
When's the last time you had a gumball?
Oh, not for a long time. You know, after working in the gumball factory, you get kind of sick.
Gumballed out.
You get gumballed out. Having a gumball is no longer a treat.
Well, we like hearing from you. Send us your thoughts in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, not too much salt in our recipe.
No, not at all. Not at all.
And lots more of your calls. We have our medical myth buster, some more research. Stick around here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. We'll take another call after our recipe. We'll take more than another call, a bunch of other calls after our recipe. The recipe for grilled eggplant with peanut sauce.
Now, the rumor has it is that you are a closet eggplant eater. That's the rumor. When I go down the street, people say to me that they see you sometimes with an eggplant in your hand, just and you just scoop it out. You love it so much.
Yeah, that certainly is an untrue rumor. You'll notice, Zorba, we don't have the recipe in front of us, as we almost always
That's
do.
That's true. That's true.
Adam got lazy this week.
Adam got lazy, which I totally appreciate,
given that it's an eggplant recipe.
So eggplant is not something you hanker towards.
Exactly right.
Now, I remember when I was a child, my mother brought home eggplant for the first time, and I remember thinking, "Why? What does this have to do with eggs?" And I've never answered that question. Of course, I have no idea.
It's round. I mean,
it's round and oval, and it's dark. I don't think it looks like an egg in the least.
Well, if it were smaller and white, it would be an egg.
Large. I mean, you know, it doesn't even look like an ostrich egg. It's not egg-shaped. It's kind of big. Who knows why it's called
I don't know.
But I happen to like eggplant. I love eggplant done the Greek way with moussaka. Mm-hmm. Or a vegetarian eggplant. Mm-hmm. But for people who like eggplant, this is a good eggplant recipe.
And it's got
an Indonesian peanut sauce is used throughout Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, the Philippines.
Well, as we do the recipe here, I'm going to do my best to act as though
it really sounds good.
Okay, so you're going to do your best.
But this is a charade.
Exactly.
This is not the case. Yeah. Okay, start out with one large eggplant cut into 1/2-inch slices.
One large eggplant cut into half-inch slices.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. Salt it to taste. Teaspoon of sesame oil.
Little tea sesame oil.
Oh, you like sesame. Teaspoon olive oil.
Little tea olive oil.
You like olive oil.
Sure.
Clove of garlic minced.
A clove of garlic minced.
You like garlic.
I do like garlic.
A shallot minced.
That's good, too. A shallot minced.
Okay. How about a quarter teaspoon crushed red pepper flakes?
Do you like that? Sure. A quarter of little tea, maybe more, crushed red pepper flakes.
How about a quarter of a cup of natural crunchy peanut butter?
Quarter cup of... I haven't had peanut butter in forever.
For a long time. I like it all right, but why not?
I'm not a kid. Only kids eat peanut butter. That was a quarter cup natural crunchy. That's the best kind, peanut butter.
Yeah, 2 teaspoons soy sauce.
2 little tea soy sauce.
Teaspoon of honey.
2 little tea honey.
2 teaspoons of lemon juice.
2 little tea lemon juice.
And some olive oil for brushing.
The eggplant.
If we used everything but the eggplant, you would have the recipe.
Get rid of the eggplant. Top of the hour, if I can substitute a pork chop for this.
Peanut sauce on a pork chop. Okay, here's how we do it. Lightly salt the eggplant, then place it in a strainer and drain it for 1 hour. And that's the way you really prepare eggplant and get it to soften up. Then pat it dry with some paper towels. Discard those paper towels. Then simmer the sesame and olive oil in a small saucepan and saute the garlic, the shallot, which is the green onion, and the red pepper flakes until these are soft. Then add the peanut butter and cook, stirring often for about a minute. So you've got to warm it through, but you've got to move it around or it will get stuck. Then add the soy sauce, lemon juice, and 1 cup of water. Bring the mixture to a boil until it starts to thicken. And it'll start to thicken right away, by the way. Then season it with a little salt and pepper to taste and simmer while the sauce thickens again. Okay, so you season it. It gets a certain consistency, which is sort of a thickened consistency. It's hard to explain, but you get used to it. Not watery.
Okay.
Okay, now brush the eggplant with olive oil and grill on all sides until just cooked. All sides are 2. We'll be right down all sides.
All sides. You don't put it 2. Up on end there.
No, just 2 sides. But you grill. By the way, you can either if you don't like the skin on the eggplant, I like the skin. You can peel it beforehand. I happen to like the skin on the eggplant. So you brush the eggplant with olive oil, grill on both sides until cooked, about 4 minutes on each side. Then serve. Put the eggplant on a plate and put the peanut sauce over it. And if you like eggplant, this is a good eggplant recipe. Yeah. And if not, tune in next week.
Yeah.
we'll have pork.
Do you want to pretend that we have it here and that we're tasting it and we're saying yum yum yum?
Try it again. Try it again. Oh, this is delicious. No, I don't think you would eat this. If you don't like it, it's an acquired taste. If you don't like eggplant, this recipe is not for you.
And thanks again to our producer, Adam Friedrich, for not preparing this recipe for us this time around. But you'll probably like it if, as Zorba says, you like eggplant.
That's right.
We're happy to send it to you. Address your request to Zorba Pastor and Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip code 53706. Be sure to enclose that self-addressed, stamped, business-sized envelope so we don't have to pay to send it back to you.
Or come to our website at zorbapastor.org. You'll be there and you'll see that recipe, other fun recipes, and sign up for our podcast for our weekly recipe.
If you have a question for Zorba, you will call 800-462-7413, as did this listener in Auburn, Alabama. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I was wondering if Zorba could give me some information on the diet pill Hootia. I think 2020 ran a special on it, and it's supposed to suppress your appetite, and I wonder if there's any kind of reaction or any kind of information you can give me about it.
Hootia? Well, Hootia, it's called?
Yeah, Hootia, I don't know very much about it. I mean, I've heard about it, but is this a natural product?
Yes, I think you buy it at natural food stores, and it comes from a plant in Africa, and it's supposed to suppress your appetite.
Okay, well, let's try to analyze, even though I don't know Hootia specifically, how do you decide whether or not something is working for a diet? First of all, if there's something that was natural, over-the-counter, worked for a diet, and got people to lose, we'll say, 20 to 40 pounds, two-thirds of the people in America would be on it. And then I would buy Hootia futures, because clearly, if it works, you're going to know about it because you're going to see people losing weight. So to me, this is very typical of what we do in America, which is a fad. And the reason that we're so stuck with fad diets is that no one wants to do the hard work. The hard work becomes intolerably hard for a lot of people with diet issues, and they can't do the hard work because there's so many calories around, and people just do not have the ability to control their eating habits is really what it boils down to. I mean, and for me, I'm very lucky. I'm not overweight, but my father wasn't overweight, and he had no trouble. I'm sure I have inherited his metabolism.
Yeah, what did they say on the television program? Did they say it worked? Or?
Well, she went to Africa and interviewed the people there, and it's a plant that Africans eat when they have famine, and supposedly, you know, it's been extracted and brought to America. So.
Well, but once again, when we look at it, and I'd like to sort of expand it beyond that. You know, you have Hootia, you have, you know, the diet du jour, the book that comes out, you know, that will be essentially the diet book of the month, you know, club. And when we look at diets, the real issue always boils down to calories in, calories out. That ultimately is what it is. And so diets such as the Atkins diet and the South Beach diet, which frankly is a far better diet than the Atkins diet, it's more plentiful with fruits and vegetables, and it talks about fish oil as being good for you, which it really is. If we look at that diet, basically fat seems to be satisfying. Fat attenuates our desire to eat, and carbohydrates, especially high fructose corn syrup, which is pretty much in almost, you know, anything sweet that we eat, clearly does not attenuate and decrease our appetite, and probably stimulates our appetite because we want more of that. And anything that basically helps, such as that diet, would be good. Weight Watchers diet, obviously, even the Zone diet has some benefits and pluses to it. But something that is, you know, that is a supplement that's used where people make a lot of money, I always look askance at that. I mean, I look at it as a scam. And, you know, whether it's on 2020 or not, I mean, 2020 is not the New England Journal of Medicine.
Right.
So they may say something works, but frankly, it's 2020.
You don't watch that program.
I watch it periodically.
2020?
Yeah, sometimes.
I can't stand
sometimes.
That program.
Why not?
That's smart alecky stossel.
You don't like the smart alecky.
No, 60 Minutes is my talk program
that's
of
your,
choice.
That's
it's
your.
Hard for me to find a television talk program with people older than I am. I enjoy 60 Minutes for that reason.
But that's because you're 95.
or so. 95. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Sure, bye-bye. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Racine, Wisconsin. Hi.
Boy, I'm so excited to get your advice today.
Oh, well, we're excited that you called. How can we help?
Well, my boyfriend and I have been having a heated debate about his diet. Now, he had his cholesterol checked, and it was 201, and I guess his triglycerides were a little bit elevated, and his doctor suggested that he eat a healthier diet. So he started cutting the fat out, and he's cut so much fat out of his diet that I think it's unhealthy. He's developed some skin problems, some dermatitis and chafing and itching. He's lost quite a bit of weight, which is heart healthy, but I'm just concerned that he's not eating enough healthy fat. So we've been debating and debating, and I'm wondering if there's a correlation between, you know, fat and your skin.
Right. Well, the skin issues may or may not be. There's really no relationship between the skin issues and fat. I mean, for the most part, you go on a low-fat diet. I'm sorry, it doesn't necessarily produce skin problems. But getting back to the issue, you know, a low-fat diet is not a no-fat diet, and we certainly do need some fat, but we don't need animal fat, with the exception of fish. We're okay with vegetable fat, olive oil, canola oil, and the fat of walnuts, for instance, and
right.
Cashew nuts are really good. Has he eliminated all of his animal fat? Well, what's he done?
Yeah, well, what he's done is he eats, all of the food that he eats is like steamed or
okay.
grilled or baked with
mm-hmm.
no fat.
Okay.
He eats pretty much chicken breast, fat, you know, skinless.
Mm-hmm. Boneless chicken breast.
Chicken okay. breast.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's not, the only oil that he gets, or the only fat, mm-hmm. is a little bit of canola oil that's in salad dressing that he makes. But I'm thinking that he's not getting enough fat. And we were looking in books and couldn't find anywhere where they would say what a normal healthy male, how much, everything just says, you know, cut the fat. But,
yeah,
like,
but
how
actually, if you go to the National Institute of Health website, uh-huh. you go to NIH.gov and you pump in dietary fat male, you'll get the numbers. Or you go to MyPyramid.com.
Okay.
In MyPyramid.com, you put in your age, your height, your weight, and it tells you in there how many calories you need from carbohydrates, how many calories you need from fat, because we do need calories from fat. Fat is essential for us to get. It's just a certain amount of fat. And generally,
right.
generally it's about 20% of our calories.
This is your boyfriend,
from.
Right?
Right.
Do you have the same kind of diet as he does?
Well, no.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. Your boyfriend and girlfriend, don't you eat a lot of meals together?
Well, you know,
Well, that's what I was going to say. My wife, I'm relating to her. I'm identifying with this. My wife is a nut like your boyfriend. All she'll eat is really, 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 really healthy stuff all the time.
Yeah.
How do you go out to eat with a person like
this?
Well,
it's been tricky. But, see, I was trying to improve my health, too. So, you know, we try to just get something grilled or, you know, salads or... We don't go out to eat as much as we used to. That's for sure.
Uh-huh. Well, I think it's because you know you have to have control
yeah.
of your diet. But wait a second,
right.
Tom, are you saying that if you're eating really well, you can't go out to eat?
You can't go out to eat together when one person wants to get a good cheeseburger and the other person wants a salad. They don't tend to have cheeseburgers and salads at the same place. And if they do, the stupid salad place makes a crummy cheeseburger every single time. Am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong.
Well, we can find some really good choices. There's always, I'm amazed at what's on the menus at restaurants. You can get a really nice fish.
Uh-huh.
He does eat fish, too. And
no, he's looking for the burger. He's not looking for the fish. He's looking for the greasy spoon burger.
Okay.
In which case, the salad is iceberg lettuce and Thousand Island dressing.
Well, you heard what she said. They don't go out to eat that much anymore.
Right. But now, I have one more comment, Zorba.
Right.
Now, when I started taking... flaxseed oil, and my skin got so much better.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had dry skin on my legs. And
oh, cool.
So, you know, that's why I was thinking there was a correlation
yeah.
between the oil.
I don't know why.
Anyway.
I don't know why. I don't
okay.
know. I mean, I don't have an answer for that. When people do dietary changes, sometimes they cosmetically mm-hmm. change, but it has to do with, you know, whether or not they're doing other things in their life, and obviously
okay.
it helped you in your life, but there's no real correlation there.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right, thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck indeed with that
with that restaurant problem.
Healthy boyfriend, yeah.
There we go.
Bye-bye.
All right,
maybe
thanks.
Her boyfriend should go out to dinner with your wife.
800-462-7413. Zorba, why don't you keep your judge's robe on and grab your gavel, because we need to help settle another debate. This one for Ginny in Toledo, Ohio. Ginny writes, "We are having a discussion in our office regarding natural vitamins versus man-made vitamins. Several people have claimed that you should never use man-made vitamins because they aren't as effective. The rest of us dispute that. Can you help?"
Yes, I can. The person who says natural vitamins are more effective than natural vitamins is wrong. Completely, 100% undoubtedly wrong. A vitamin is a vitamin is a vitamin. In the body, whether it comes from a natural source or an artificial source, it's the same chemical entity that's in there. Now, how it's derived is different. And you may prefer to buy, for aesthetic reasons, a natural vitamin, but there is no scientific proof, for instance, that natural vitamin C or vitamin C, which is ascorbic acid that's made chemically, is absorbed any differently in the body. There's no proof there at all. I mean, a vitamin's a vitamin. Both prevent scurvy. Both are important for a healthy body, and you can get them either way.
But I've heard you say a number of times, if you have a choice between the vitamin and eating the food that has the vitamin, the food is better.
It takes precedent. And in fact, there are good issues. The perfect example is beta-carotene. We know if you eat foods high in beta-carotene, such as broccoli and cauliflower, kale, and other what we call cruciferous vegetables, that you have a lower incidence of cancer. On the other hand, when we gave beta-carotene, either natural or synthetic, in a pill form, it didn't reduce the risk of cancer. And in fact, for smoking, it increased the risk of cancer. So it's very clear there's other stuff in food besides the vitamin that counts. So yes, give me vitamins or give me food, the food takes precedence.
Judge Zorba is happy to answer your health and lifestyle questions and settle your bets. Let us know what they are by sending us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stick around, some interesting research coming up. We have our medical myth buster and more of your calls as well here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. To your questions in just a few minutes, but we'll spend a little time now, Zorba, talking about the new birth control pill that was just approved recently by the FDA, Libril, which eliminates the woman's menstrual cycle.
Right. Now, we have to look back at the history of birth control pills. At the very beginning, birth control pills were very high dose compared to the pills today, and they were given continuously, and women stopped having menstrual periods. And they found out after a year or two, and in those days, believe me, the testing was not anything like the testing is today. They found a number of women were not happy not having some sort of menstrual cycle. And so when the original pill was made, it was made with 3 weeks on, 1 week off. And frankly, it was made because that sold more pills. The ones that were continuous didn't sell more pills. Then later on, we discovered that having those menstrual cycles was important because it reduced the risk of uterine cancer. And then back in the 70s and early 80s, we thought, well, a woman should be on for three or four years on birth control pills. And then she should stop the pill because otherwise it would be bad for her body. And this new particular pill, taking all that into consideration, is a very low dose of estrogen and progesterone. It does not appear to increase the risk of cancer at all. And basically, a woman takes it continuously, and for many women, it stops the cycle.
Does not appear.
Well, it does not appear. And the reason is the pill hasn't been out that long. The FDA has approved it, and there is a little controversy. There's some people who believe that, some researchers still believe that you have to have regular menstrual cycles sometime throughout the year in order to prevent uterine cancer, because that's been the theory all along. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, but we don't know that with this particular pill.
Interesting to me, the stories on this, when it was approved by the FDA, the women in the stories on TV and radio and newspapers were quoted saying things like, "It doesn't feel to me like I'm a real woman. The period is important to me psychologically, which I found interesting.
Right, absolutely. And that's what they discovered, as I said, many years ago when the pill first came out. Also, there are some other pills that are similar to this, a pill called Seasonal. And Seasonal is a pill that you take continuously for 90 days, and then you have a period. So instead of having, we'll say, 12 or 13 or 14 periods a year, a woman can have 4 periods a year. And that's a very interesting alternative. The thing about Librel also is that it's a very low-dose pill, so a number of women spot throughout the year. And that's very similar to when we give the progesterone shot, Depo Provera, where women spot, and they spot at unexpected times.
Well, safety is the most important. What's your bottom line on
safety? Well, bottom line is I think the FDA approved it. I think safety, it is most likely safe, and I think that it's okay. It's another alternative for women who don't want to have any menstrual cycle to take. And I think it's a woman's choice. She looks at the benefits and the risks, and she and her doctor decide.
800-462-7413 is the toll-free number if you have a question for Zorba. Zorba, a listener with us now in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, I'm kind of at the age that I don't know when it's safe not to medicate myself, if you will, for pregnancy. I just kind of stopped my menses, and that was it. How can I know when it's safe not that I won't be getting pregnant and I'm really like menopausal?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a couple of things you can do. First of all, there's a blood test you can get, which is called FSH, follicle stimulating hormone. And that blood test pretty much helps us tell whether or not a woman still is capable of bearing children. So that's a test you can do. It's not 100% foolproof, but if your FSH is of a certain level, which is quite high, it implies the ovary simply is now producing estrogen, and that means it's safe to have sex and not get pregnant. But that's a real problem at the end of a woman's childbearing potential, especially if she's undergoing menopause and she's in her mid-40s and she misses a period or two and thinks, well, I'm not having periods anymore, it's okay not to use birth control when I'm having sexual relations, and then bang, you get pregnant at the age of 45, which is for many sort of shocking.
Exactly.
How old are you?
I just turned 49.
49. So the chances that you could become pregnant are very, very remote. How many periods have you now missed?
About a year and a half.
Generally, if you've missed a year and a half of period, then you've, you know, for many researchers, it's once you've had 1 year without a menstrual cycle that you're no longer, you know, able to bear children. Chances are at 49, you wouldn't be able to get pregnant in that case. But once again, that FSH test can give you the answer. It can help you decide whether or not you want to stop using birth control.
Very good.
Yeah. I would just stop, and if by chance you get pregnant, give Zorba a call.
Yeah, give us a call, right.
Yeah, and say, yeah, hey, Zorba, you were
wrong. Guess what? I've got a child.
You'll have a couple of
49.
Other words for him.
Gosh, that would be a shock, wouldn't it? Guess what, honey? I'm pregnant.
That's right.
Anyway, good luck.
Thank you so much.
800-462-7413.
You know, it reminds me of a story. I a family doc. I'm in a small town outside of Madison, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And when my wife was pregnant with our third child, because we had three children in 32 months, we had three children. And my mother-in-law said, you know, she said, how could you be pregnant again? You know, this idea that we had no concept of birth control and that it wasn't really in our plan to have children one right after another, because she thought kids should be spaced every 5 years exactly. That was her concept. A proper pregnancy and child raising. So
interesting. 800-462-7413. Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's myth deals with the effects of alcohol on the brain. It's long been said that when you drink, you're killing off brain cells. Is this true?
No, it's not. Now, where did this come from, and is it true in some cases? Well, the answer is yes. I mean, if you have a drink Or two drinks a day, which is moderate drinking, 1 to 2 drinks. Certainly two drinks a day for men, and for women, it's somewhere between 1 and 2 drinks.
Right.
That doesn't kill any brain cells at
all. Well, what if you have 6 drinks a day every day?
Well, that's exactly what it is. If you're first of all, we know that if you're an alcoholic, it does produce changes in what are called the dendrites of the brain cells. We know that you can have something called Wernicke syndrome, Korsakoff syndrome, which is a disease that occurs in the brain. So people who are alcoholics have it. Where that line is, that's a very interesting thing. We know, for instance, once you exceed 2 drinks a day on a regular basis as an adult, you run a risk of an increased risk of heart attack and stroke.
Yeah.
So stroke affects the brain. So you could say it's affecting your brain.
Yeah.
And we know that alcoholics who drink, we'll say, a quart of whiskey a day or a quart of vodka a day, they definitely affect their brains. They definitely develop brain dysfunction, which is an alcoholic encephalopathy, it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But now where is it, you know, is it at 6 drinks and is it at 1? We know 1 quart it's there. Is it at 6 drinks a day? Well, I think it probably depends on the person and individual predilection. But it definitely is not there at 1 to 2 drinks a day. I mean, 1 drink a day we know is healthy. For anyone who wants to have a drink a day, we know it's actually heart healthy and it's okay for your body. But if you're an alcoholic, any amount of alcohol is going to lead you towards getting drunk. That's no good. So it's
kind of a yes and no.
If 1 drink a day does not affect your brain. A quart of alcohol a day does affect your brain. Does it start at 6? I don't think, you know, you'd have to have somebody who drank 6 drinks a day who you followed for 20 years and then see and then look at their brains, you know, do a brain biopsy.
Yeah.
I don't think that study is going to be done. I don't think
so. You might get some volunteers.
I don't think so.
But no public radio volunteers.
No public, not on this show.
Do you have a myth for us? We'll try to bust it or prove it right. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our phone number is 800-462-7413. Our next caller, Zorba, is in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have a fairly healthy 2-year-old daughter who has been diagnosed with clear liquid behind her ear, and she's had it now for over about 2 months.
Now, that's behind her ear or in her ear?
In her ear, but behind...
Behind the eardrum.
Correct, behind the eardrum.
Behind the eardrum, okay. Not behind the ear, behind the eardrum.
Correct,
okay.
Correct.
Please, go on.
So anyway, they've wanted to put her on...
There she is now.
There she is. They've wanted to put her on a steroid or some Claritin.
Uh-oh, what did she break?
Nothing.
Oh, okay, good.
So anyway, she has the clear liquid behind the eardrum, and they want me to put her on a steroid or some kind of allergy medication to try and, quote-unquote, dry the clear liquid up.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is I really prefer not to put her on any medication.
Mm-hmm.
She has never been on any medication in her 2-year lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to avoid that. And I'm wondering, first of all, what are the effects of this clear liquid behind her ear? You know, will it cause long-term damage? Is it something that will go away?
Yeah.
Or
well, let's talk about that. First of all, most children with serous otitis, which is liquid behind the eardrum, goes away on its own. I mean, it's either due to a bacterial infection or a viral infection, and frankly, you don't have to do anything with it. You're not going to do any permanent
damage.
But
it's been a couple of months.
You don't have, doesn't matter, it can be 6 months or a year. You're not, as long as your child hears okay, you're not going to do any damage, and you can check your child's hearing. But for most kids, their hearing is just fine, and it's just kind of something that you follow. For most children, you don't give steroids in order to get rid of fluid in the eardrum, and frankly, I don't know if steroids will do very much to it at all. I mean, for the most part, we kind of watch these things, and they go away.
Excellent.
You know, we watch and we go away. So I definitely would not use steroids.
Don't we tend to over-medicate your problems?
Absolutely.
Kids?
Yeah. We definitely do. If we look at the Dutch, for instance, the Dutch don't give antibiotic except in about 15% of children who have acute ear infections with a red swollen eardrum. And their deafness rates, for instance, and ear damage rates are exactly the same as they are in the U.S. So we clearly over-medicate with antibiotics. And I think prednisone or a steroid is an overkill. That's
great.
What I would think.
So, and one of the things I guess I had to question is, she does have a follow-up checkup in another couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I was going to ask them, they keep saying, well, it could be affecting your hearing. You know, they have not yet suggested, should I get it tested? So is that something that I should go ahead and just say?
Well, you can get it tested. A little hard in a 2-year-old, but you can often, sometimes you can get them to test hearing. Now, your doc, let's talk about your doctor. Your doctor is a pediatrician,
correct.
Family doctor.
A pediatrician.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Now, why does your doctor think your child needs steroids? to reduce the fluid?
They were concerned that the clear liquid could then go ahead and build up pressure in the eardrum and then affect the growth or the development of the ear mm-hmm. over time.
Yeah.
And that since it has been there for at least 2 months, that this is potentially an issue. Of course, she's never complained of any pain.
Yeah.
We've been on many flights.
I have to tell you, it's not unusual with kids with chronic infection to have fluid behind their eardrum for a couple of months, and we just kind of watch it over time, and some of those kids end up getting tubes in their ears, some don't. But if you want to have a good, if you want to look at a good seasoned idea of this, if you go to our we have links on our website, zorbapastor.org. And you go to the National Institute of Health website on what's called Cirrus Otitis Media, and that'll be there. And we'll have a link there on that website. And you can read all about it with the NIH. There's a lot of over-medication for this. You know, before I put my child on steroids, I would think twice, and I would get a second opinion for sure. But steroids are not commonly used in this situation. What's most commonly used is tincture of time. So that's
excellent.
What I would use.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank
and,
you.
And say hi to your child for me. It sounds like she was having a lot of fun while you were on the phone.
Indeed, as always.
Okay.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
Zorba, before we go, you've been cited again by the Zorba Pastor on your health.
Grammar police. Great.
This time you offended Deputy Sarah from Buffalo, New York. Apparently you said something that Sarah was not fond of. On a recent show, you described the leftover flavors in a skillet as frond, when it is actually fond.
Right. It's not frond. It's fond. That's right.
She goes on to say that you
fond.
That you pronounced turmeric as turmeric.
And you mean versus turmeric.
Turmeric. I'm sorry. Turmeric as turmeric.
That's right. That is how I pronounced it. Uh-huh. That is correct. Uh-huh.
But
I pronounce February as February, yep. Not February.
But you're a little off the hook on this one.
Yeah.
Our producer, Adam Friedrich, did I pronounce it right? did some research and found out that turmeric is actually pronounced turmeric in some Asian countries.
That's right.
The
that's
ones
exactly
that
right.
you
that I visited. That's exactly it.
So
on one, I'm right, and on one, I'm wrong. It's fond, not frond.
If you have a grammar fine that you'd like Zorba to pay or just have a question or comment for us, then send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, we'll see you next week.
A pleasure, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Call us anytime with your health and lifestyle questions at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor and Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director, and Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For a copy of today's show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0616Z. To buy Zorba's book, The Longevity Code, Your Personal Prescription for a Longer, Sweeter Life, or to pick up a copy of Zorba's Heart Healthy Cookbook, just go to our website at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.